This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Okay, this is Craig Lubo, and thank you for joining us. We have with us my co-host today is Greg Schwartz and Janet Rogers. And as part of our pitch drive tonight, or pledge drive, we're going to be looking back and listening to some clips from prior shows and talking about what it means to have KKFI's community radio here and looking possibly forward and updating some of those clips. Thank you, Janet and Greg, for being here, too.
Thank you. Enjoy being here.
Yes, sir. Janet, let's start with one of your clips. You had a show on paratransit. If you'll set us up for that, tell us what that's about.
Well, this particular clip was from August 18th. It's pretty recent. And I was talking to Jameson Otten, who is KCATA Chief Transportation Officer. And one of the things that he does is he manages the special transportation for people with disabilities. So that's things like Share a Fare. You're used to seeing those buses go around town. And he talks about travel training for people with disabilities, which teaches people how to use the regular bus service. So let's listen to Jameson.
Also combine that with a regional travel training program for folks who use paratransit but do want to use the fixed route but just don't know how. So we have that program which provides a one-on-one hand-holding to, again, to the level of the customer to get them trained on fixed route so they can navigate that system as well.
I really think a lot of people would like to move to fixed route if they knew how to use it effectively because it gives them a lot more flexibility and scheduling is so much easier because you just go to the bus stop and they don't have all the other complications.
You know, you're right. The sometimes getting on that bus can be intimidating for the first time, right? So this program is designed to take that away. Our travel trainers will ride with passengers for as long as it takes so that they're comfortable, and then they even shadow them on their first official trip on their own to make sure that they're safe. There's several benefits in that. One is that they don't have to call and book a reservation anymore. They're able to be spontaneous. They're able to decide, I want to go to the plaza today. No, I want to turn around and go to the Northland. No, I want to turn around and go wherever. with paratransit, that's impossible because you have to book your trip a day in advance. The other advantage is the number of headways on each route. You know, if you've missed your bus, depending on the route, there may be another one coming as frequently as 15 minutes. So, you know, that opens up a whole new world for folks who are using paratransit but can use the bus and choose to use the bus. I will point out that going through travel training does not diminish the person's ability to use paratransit. You know, if you go through training, it's not that you can't use paratransit anymore. We don't want people to think that, but we want to add another tool to their commute toolbox.
So it's really a win-win situation. When they feel they need or want paratransit, they can still use it, but when they want flexibility or last-minute decisions, they can hop on a regular bus.
Absolutely.
Okay. Janet, that was a great clip.
Well, I've got an important update on that, too. Is one of the things that Radioactive Magazine allows us to do is to bring a lot of information to the public. And although I was talking about travel training with Jameson, one of the reasons it's really become important now is at the KCATA Board of Commissioners meeting in October, I expect to see them vote to make the regular fixed route buses free for anyone who is ADA qualified. So if you're disabled and you're currently riding special transportation, you can still do that. But they want to make this as easy as possible for those people to ride the regular bus. It gives you so much more flexibility, and it's a great opportunity. And I think that the ATA board is making a great decision by doing this. They almost did it at the last board meeting, and they are going to do it this next one. And the special transportation name is all going to be changed with New Ride KC as well. And my understanding is it's all going to become RideKC Access. So that's just the type of things we talk about on Transit Talk.
Okay. And these are topics that you don't get anywhere else. You don't get them on the commercial stations. And even NPR, you don't get them because they focus mostly on national stuff, whereas we focus a lot of local and regional information. So if this is something you like and you want to continue to have these shows, we encourage you and hope that you will call and pledge. Our pledge line is 888-931-0901. Or you can also go online and donate online at kkfi.org. So our next clip that we're going to play is a segment that was called Killing for God, and that was hosted by Greg Schwartz here and Bill Claus. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after we played the clip.
Hey, about Killing for God, and I thought that was a good introduction to that, perhaps.
Right. My name is Greg Schwartz. I'm a free thought activist in Kansas City. I classify myself as an atheistic humanist. Like to emphasize the humanist part of it, although I have no belief that there's any type of supernatural entities. So the purpose of today's show is to discuss violence and killing in the name of God. And it's not something that goes back to the 1700s like that when that preacher lived. It's gone back much further than that, and it exists even to today. In addition to historical examples, we have just recently the killings at the Jewish Community Center of Greater Kansas City and at Village Siloam. In 2009, we had the killing of Dr. George Tiller at the Reformation Lutheran Church in Wichita, which had religious origins. We have violence in the name of Islam, and that's very, very frequent, and it's probably the thing that most people think about when they think about religious violence and killing in the name of God today. And it has a reverse effect. We had a 15-year-old young Muslim run down outside a Somali community center in what many have called a hate crime.
Oh, but when you talk about the stakes are so high, you're talking about everlasting happiness with heaven, everlasting damnation with hell. There's a couple of things that flow from that, in my opinion, and I think it's part of the reason. I mean, killing somebody now when this is somebody that's a non-believer or that is an infidel, if you will, or somebody who's going to spend everlasting time in hell, you know, forever and ever and ever, well, their time on the earth is just so insignificant to what they're facing anyway, and your time in heaven is so insignificant to what you are now, that the moment is not important. The importance of a particular human life now is unimportant. And I think you can look historically on how that has worked itself out. I mean, during the medieval time, and I'm not going to try and go through the scoreboard of all that went on in the medieval time, but if you start like with Henry VIII, he's the one who took the Anglican Church away from the Catholic Church. Well, you know, when he started his reign, you know, and the Catholic Church was the church to believe in, then he wanted to move he wanted to take the power away from the Pope and become the infallible one himself. Well, then suddenly it became a capital offense to believe in what used to be okay to believe in. And so all during the Middle Ages, there were people that were executed. And when I mean executed in the Middle Ages, you're talking about burned at the stake. You're talking about being flayed alive. You're talking about being boiled in oil. You know, all of just really horrible ways of dying.
Okay. Greg, tell us, is this something you would ever hear on another station?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Well, rarely, I would say. Certainly not a commercial radio station.
Right. So and that's the reason for supporting us.
Right. That's one of the great things about KKFI is that we have a wide variety of music and we have a wide variety of public interest shows. this station, I've been involved with it, I think, since about 2007. And, of course, it's been around a lot longer than that. And it is really one of the most amazing things in the world, because every single one of the programmers that we have are volunteers. And it's just amazing to see a station on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with volunteers. Now, we do have three or four staff members that are paid, but almost all the work that's done on the air is done by volunteers. And the thing as I mentioned, I think, the thing that's neat is that we have such a wide variety of things that we're covering, and it also is different than what you're ever going to find on a regular radio station.
Okay. And is there any update that you would want to give on this issue? Or
on the issue that we discussed at the prior program? Well, I know a lot of atheists and agnostics and freethinkers in Kansas City and elsewhere. And, you know, it's kind of hard for anybody to want to kill somebody else or injure somebody else based upon a dedication to evidence and reason. You know, it's just not the type of thing that makes people hate other people enough to kill them. And so we have the most recent event out in, what was it, Oregon. There's a lot of questions as to what his motives were and all that, but it appears that you know, he was asking those people about religion, but apparently he didn't make any distinction as to who he killed.
Okay, thank you for that. People enjoyed listening to that. And again, let me give you the phone number to call in and pledge. We hope you will do so and support us with the most generous pledge you can, whether that's $5 or $5,000. Every dollar has its value to us and helps us. So please call us at 888-931-0901, or you can go online at kkfi.org. Our next piece is going to be a segment that I did. We had Sarah Biles from Harvesters and Colby Morton and Shane Stang from Food Not Bombs. And we're going to play that clip, and then we have Colby online, and he's going to talk to us for a couple minutes after we play the clip.
Harvesters actually is a regional food bank, and we serve 26 counties in northwest Missouri and northeast Kansas. But taking a look specifically at Jackson County, Missouri, and perhaps Johnson County, Kansas, where people might not think there's hunger, hunger internationally looks a lot different than hunger locally. You don't necessarily know who's hungry. It could be your neighbor. We serve an estimated 1 in 7 people in our community who we are considered food insecure, which means they may have food today, but they may not know where their next meal is coming from. So when you take a look at the latest hunger numbers of food insecurity in Jackson County, it's about 124,000 adults in Jackson County, or 18.4% of the population. 34,000 children, that's 21%, so 1 in 5 children are food insecure. And in Johnson County, where typically some people think that might be a little more affluent county, there's still hunger there as well. 65,000 adults, 25,000 children of people who receive food assistance through our network are employed. They do have some sort of job. So, it, you know, a lot of people might think that everybody who's food insecure is homeless. Only 5% of those we serve are homeless.
Food is a right, not a privilege.
Kansas City Produce donates a lot of their produce to us. It would be very tremendous. They're a tremendous help to us. Most all of our produce and such is donated by Kansas City Produce, so yeah, they've been a huge help for us.
And it's generally the stuff that doesn't look good enough to sell, or like a bag of avocados that one avocado went bad, so they're going to discard the whole bag, so it's not sellable. It's not in
presentable condition. So instead of throwing it away, they put it to the side. We take it, and then we use that to serve people and give away.
Right.
And that's generally how we acquire a lot of our food, too. I mean, we work with food industry and manufacturers and farmers and all kinds of people that have food that otherwise would go to waste. So we're all rescuing a lot of food. So that you know, helps the environment as well and does a lot of other good in addition to feeding people.
All right.
Basically, Food Not Bombs started in the early 80s in Massachusetts. It was a group of anti-nuclear activists that were like protesting for the environment, and they were seeing so much money being spent on military spending that they were, and money was spent on military that could actually go to like the homeless and feed the hungry and like basically in poverty if they cut back. So they started cooking food off discarded food. And cooking meals for people, and then distributing literature about social change and stuff.
Okay, Colby, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great, thank you. Do you have some updates on any of that?
I'd like to say Food Not Bombs is still going strong. We're 4 months in now, and we're serving at least 50 people a week. So, it's really helping out, and it's a big deal, and it's. But hunger is definitely an issue.
And how important is it to your group and groups like yours to have independent media, whether it's community radio like ours or independent internet-based newsletters, et cetera? How important is it to you to get getting your message out?
Without independent media, our message wouldn't be able to be heard. Really, it's all we rely on. The mainstream media doesn't really focus on the things we focus on. So without like radio stations like you guys, we wouldn't be able to get our message out as well as we have been able to.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Okay. All right. And I do want to give out the pledge number again. It's 888-931-0901. And one of the things I would mention, we talked about this some when I was doing Eco Radio last night, is that community radio, it belongs to you. It's a community station. We don't get any corporate funding. We don't accept any donations from corporations because we want to make sure that we maintain our independence. One of the examples, and this applies to radio and TV stations that I had yesterday, drawing a distinction between us and public radio and public TV. Public TV and public radio, they do take, they don't have commercials, but they do take sponsorships from corporations. And one example of that is the Koch brothers in their industries. And a few years ago, there was a film called Citizen Koch. It was actually originally produced for a public TV station, I believe it was in Boston, and the Koch brothers interfered with that, and or at least had influence, and so the station withdrew showing that, and then they had to look to other means, which ultimately the film was shown in the independent movie circuit around the country. But that's the type of thing we avoid. But we have to, because of that, we're dependent on you as a listener. And we contribute, and we have over 100 volunteers here. Greg and Janet, myself, Mike Nichols, we're all volunteers. So we try to give to you 365 days out of the year. And we hope in return that three or four times a year you will think about supporting the station and contributing something back to the station to keep the community radio going. All right, so the next clip we're going to play is a clip called One Struggle. It was Kristen Chow was the host of that, and it was one that was, she did the show, I think it was close to when the organization formed. It was in response to Ferguson and
other police brutality. There's also a second organization that she mentions on there. And so take a listen to that.
So there are two organizations represented here today, One Struggle KC and Una Lucha KC. So let's just start off by talking about how each of the organizations got started. When were they funded and founded and why?
One Struggle KC was founded late October after community activists had been back and forth to Ferguson, also been involved in activism here in Kansas City, and really got together and just said, what are we going to do here in Kansas City to really uplift the voices of particularly young black folks, but then also how are we going to talk about black-brown solidarity and a coalition building?
Well, Una Lucha also became, started in that late October as well. And it was actually in response to some events that occurred in Ayotzinapa, Guerrero, on September 25th and 26th. And so then in having casual conversations with some friends here at One Struggle, we started connecting how that state-sponsored violence was identical as far as what was happening in Ferguson. It's the same thing that's been happening in Mexico. Honestly, I think there was also a little bit of a just... My partner and I were having a conversation and saying, okay, well, you know, what can we do? And trying to brainstorm and say, well, maybe we can do something between us. And we were thinking, you know, maybe we can raise some funds and send something down there and start helping them. But we quickly found out that, you know, money's not the answer. There's a lot of systematic changes that need to take place. So with some folks that had already been with One Struggle, one of our co-founders, Luz, had already taken, organized some actions, I believe, before everything was actually formed with more people.
So what's the connection between the two groups?
I think we started out particularly with One Struggle. We are multiracial. The co-founders are multiracial, black, and Latino. And I think that we were very intentional about this isn't going to be just one community and having this discussion. And we really need to talk about what are the parallels in our community because we're all fighting against systems of white supremacy. And what does that look like here in Kansas City that, you know, a lot of the coalition building happens in silos or is, like, very fragmented? And what does it look like for young people to be leading that movement and to be able to just join forces?
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that clip. Of course, that's an ongoing issue, and we certainly will have more shows relating to those issues on here, and Janet will certainly be doing more transit issues. Before we give out the number again, we're going to have Greg Schwartz is going to tell you what you can get at different pledge levels.
Okay, well, actually, I want to go ahead and give out the number so that you have a chance to call in. It's 888-931-0901. And if you can't get in, I think our volunteers are about to leave in a little while. If you can't get into the number today, we'll be here tomorrow, of course. Or you can go to kkfi.org, our website, and donate. And I did want to mention that we do have some thank you gifts at different levels. If you use a credit card, this is credit card only, if you donate $90 or more, you can get a one of several gifts. The first thing is a official KKFI collector's t-shirt. This is a high quality long sleeve shirt. With winter coming on, it's appropriate. And the sizes are small through 4XL. And if you don't want that, you can also get a pair of tickets to the KKFI Hoedown, which is on two stages at Knuckleheads. That's on October the 17th. And then there's also, instead of either one of those two things, you can also get a pair of tickets to Macabre KC Halloween night, at Knuckleheads. That's on October 31st, and it's kind of a lengthy description, so I think that's probably on our website. If you wanted to donate more at the $150 level, you can be a guest DJ on one of the music shows. where if you have music that you'd like to present within the particular genre of a show, you can get a guest DJ for $150. Or for $200, you can get the combo, which is the T-shirt or one of the pairs of tickets, plus be a guest DJ. So those are all things that if you call in and make your pledge at 888-931-0901, you can get one of those thank you gifts.
All right. Thank you, Greg. Our next clip is going to be by Janet, and you want to introduce that?
Yes, this next clip is on job access and some social justice issues that we have in town. But right before we go into it, I want to let you know that we've talked a little bit about KKFI being run mainly by volunteers. And I think that creates a great opportunity for people. I know I came down here and was bugging the management for a while that I wanted to do something on transit because I didn't feel that transit was being covered sufficiently in the region. I mean, yes, it gets covered occasionally if there's something big like a streetcar or when the county executive, Mike Sanders, is going to purchase the old Rock Island line, then we get tons and tons of coverage. But there's 55,000 people a day who ride the bus system, and all the issues that deal with them don't get covered. And KKFI and Radioactive Magazine has given us the opportunity to do that. So if you have an advocacy group or issues that you deal with, then you should consider coming down and taking part as a volunteer. You can either do a program yourself or come down and have your group interviewed by someone else that's on the programmers list. And so we're having a meeting this Sunday, October 11th at 1 p.m. down here at KKFI. We're at 39th and Main. And if you're interested in taking part or letting your information come out, please come down and be a part of that. And that's one of the real reasons that KKFI is such an asset. And we hope that you really do pledge and become an active member. Now, this particular clip was one that I interviewed Lou Austin, who's chairman of Three Trails Village CID. And we discussed our inability to get to 82% of the jobs in the region by transit. The equity issues that we're interested in are to do with access to jobs. Lou, would you give us some insights into the job access problem?
Janet, the most obvious to me is the recently published Brookings Institute study that showed in Kansas City 82% of the jobs are not accessible by public transit. And to me, that is a very big problem. I've been involved in this for now decades. I know hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent. Maybe billions, who knows, but at the end of the day, if 82% of the jobs are not accessible by transit, it indicates to me that we're out of balance.
Definitely. I think we would both agree with this, that one of the most important reasons that people use transit is to get to jobs. And so if you aren't fulfilling that need, then you're hurting everyone in the community, especially the minority and low-income populations who are particularly heavy users of transit. Now, if you look at the maps in the transportation update, you'll see that there's a lot of population and there's a lot of job growth planned for the Johnson County area. And that's also the area that's really causing a lot of this problem with access to jobs, isn't it?
That is a distortion, yes. Johnson County is an economic powerhouse. It's a self-contained in a lot of ways, or it's accessible by the freeway system. My CID is located in the old Bannister Mall area site, and several years ago we were working very hard to get additional access, transit access, into the Johnson County employment base because it's a function of economic development. It would have benefited us over here to have that connection. We could be a funnel, if you will, for people to have access to employment. What is economic development if people can't earn a reasonable living?
I think that this particular clip points to the fact that transit only gets 1.3% of the work trips, and that's because we can't get to the jobs by transit. Mid-America Regional Council is in the process of doing a study to make some recommendations to how to improve it. They want to improve our access to transit. They want to double it. It's now 18%. They want to double that over 10 years. And I think we really need to do more than that. We need to double or triple the share that we get of work trips, because that's not nearly enough, and we have some real social justice issues as a result of that, that low-income and minority populations are having difficulty getting to work, and I don't think that's good for anybody. So that's just one of the things that I wanted to finish up with, and please call the station at 888-931-0901 and pledge for KKFI. Thank you, Janet.
Just a few ending comments. Some of the other shows we've done in the past, Kristen Chow and I did two shows on immigration. That's an issue that's still looming. It's going to be a big issue in 2016, and we do plan to cover that some more. I've done shows on death penalty and the Innocence Project relating to justice issues. Another host of ours, Brian Nolan, and Malik James, they did a show relating to inequality in the law, and they focused on the inequalities between white population and people of color, and partly related that to how the lack of sufficient number of attorneys who are people of color. I think they said less than 5% of the attorneys nationwide are black. So, again, call our pledge. We hope to hear from you and that you can contribute generously. And that concludes our show, and we will be back next week.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a presentation of KKFI 90.1 FM in Kansas City. Radioactive Magazine provides a forum for activist groups and activists in the greater Kansas City area. If you would like to propose interviews, contribute commentaries, event notifications, etc. to Radioactive Magazine, call Dan Connolly at 816-217-5875. Thank you for listening.